Hold on. Oh, there's something. Is that the pulpit mic? So I can take this off. Good. I don't like this thing anyway. All right. I want you to take out your bulletins right now and open them up to the sermon outline. And I want you to pay absolutely no attention to it. Here's what happened. You know, this past week, it's been one of those weird weeks where the Lord's been dealing with me in a couple of different ways, and I thought I wanted to share this, and I thought I wanted to share that, and I've really struggled with what I wanted to talk about, and I shifted gears. A few weeks ago, I talked about starting this new series that I was all excited about, and then I just kind of fizzled out, and I'm like, I don't think the Lord wants me to go that way. And so I changed directions this week and was going to go with something completely different, something that you see on your bulletin and in your bulletin. And then yesterday, I changed my mind again, and we went back to the family wish list. And part of the reason I wanted to do that is because I've probably had more people in the last week come up to me and say, I'm looking forward to Sunday's message. Usually people are looking forward to me being done, and they're saying this week, I'm looking forward to hearing the message. So I think a lot of people are wanting to hear. So we struggled through that yesterday, and I think that God has a pretty neat message for us today. So you can pay no attention to the outline that's in there, but if there's enough room for you to take notes in that area, go ahead and do that today if you don't mind. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about on Mother's Day, I wish my husband would, and then we filled in the sentence with several different things. Today, we turn our attention to I wish my parents would do this or do that. If I gave time today in the service, and we don't, so I'm not going to do it, but if we had time to let you answer that question, I wish my parents would do this. Some of your answers, they would vary. They'd be all over the place. Some of them might be funny, like, I wish my parents would punish my little brother more, or something like that, you know, or I wish my parents would forgive me. I wish my parents were alive. Some of the answers might be a little immature. I wish my parents would do my homework for me or something like that, you know. I wish my parents would buy me a motor scooter or buy me a horse something of that nature. Now, all of these potential answers that we might have bouncing around in our brains, they all have this same biblical principle attached to it, and it's this. God has delegated responsibility for the oversight of children to parents. And while it is helpful for children or for parents to know what children wish for, if we as parents gave them exactly what they wished for, exactly what they requested all of the time, our kids would be spoiled rotten. They would grow up to be probably pretty selfish and probably pretty shallow people. And one of the reasons that God gave authority of parents over children is for the parents to help children distinguish those requests that are healthy, distinguish between those things that are good for them and those things that are potentially harmful and detrimental to them. Someone once defined maturity as the ability to postpone pleasure. So it's a huge responsibility for the parents to raise children to maturity, to help them be able to survive whenever they move on from their home into the real world. And I think that every caring parent wants help. Now, those of you who are sitting out there, you're saying, you know what, I've already got my kids raised. I'm going to go ahead and tune you out for a little while. Please don't do that. Because I think there are some things we can learn here today as parents of adults as well. So hang with me, if you will. Here's the first thing that I think that children might wish from their parents. Children want marital harmony. Now, I have met with different children down through the years who have struggled with different things in their lives. I've been able to counsel them, and I hear them say things like, I wish my parents would tell each other that they love one another, or show their love for each other, or I wish my parents would learn to communicate better. I wish my parents would stop fighting. I wish my parents would get along and stay together. One of the first teachings of the Bible, there is a direct correlation between the stability of a parent's marriage and the welfare of the children. It's Genesis 1. God told Adam and Eve, be fruitful, increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. And then in Genesis 2, God said, for this reason, the reason being having children, and a man, that's part of the reason, and a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. And so God established marriage for one of the main reasons for rearing children, for raising them and helping them grow up in a loving and stable environment. Now, there are those in our society today who argue that, well, so many marriages are failing, so we should just abandon the idea of traditional marriage because the way we're doing it now is not working very well. We're told that so many marriages end in divorce, in fact, roughly about half of them, that because so many end that way, we should just abandon the traditional family marriage or the traditional view of marriage and restructure it. Well, that doesn't make much sense to me. I want you to think for just a moment. If half of the American automobile drivers have an accident, that doesn't mean that you lower the age, or that doesn't mean that you just go ahead and say, you know what, it's okay if you drink and drive, because a lot of people are going to do that anyway. Just the opposite is true. We should consider raising the bar in those areas rather than lowering the bar. Doesn't that make sense with driving? Well, if that's the case, why shouldn't we do that within our marriages? Instead of lowering the bar as to what marriage should be about, why don't we raise it? Why don't we say this is God's standard and let's stick to that? Because the family is so important. It is the most important unit on the face of the earth. It's important that marriage is viewed as something that was established by God in creation, not something that man has just come up with on his own. So we need to be looking for ways to raise the standard in our marriages. Malachi 2:15 reads, and I'm going to read from the Living Bible. I like the way the Living Bible puts this. It says, you were united to your wife by the Lord. In God's wise plan, when you married, the two of you became one person in his sight. And what does he want? Godly children from your union. Therefore, guard your passions, keep faith with the wife of your youth. The best thing that you can do for your children is to love and be faithful to your spouse, because that provides security. That provides a positive example. Children are very perceptive as to whether their parents are getting along or not. And if they just see constant bickering or there's just tones within the house, you know, it might not even be all that much bickering, but there's just a certain chill in the house, you know, and you know you don't have the air conditioning on. It's a little frigid in the house, you know. Children see that. It creates an atmosphere of insecurity. It creates an atmosphere of instability. The Bible says, and we talked about this not all that long ago in the series that we did on Joseph. The Bible talks about how Jacob grew up in this, Joseph grew up in this unstable family. And we know that Jacob and Leah had this relationship that was really not all that great. Remember, Jacob didn't really care for her all that much. And the children who were born to Jacob and Leah, they grew up in this insecure home, and they acted out and they did some things they should have never done because of the relationship that their parents had. And it negatively can impact people for life. If you really want the best for your children, demonstrate love for one another. Ephesians 5:25 says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. And we talked about this the last time that I preached. How did he love the church? He loved the church sacrificially. He gave up his life for it. But he also loved the church unashamedly. You know, Jesus was not executed in private, but he died, raised up on a cross, out on a hill for everyone to see. Paul told King Agrippa, these things were not done in a corner. Jesus demonstrated his love right out in the open for us. And I think one of the healthiest things that we can do for our children is to let them see a little bit of our love for one another, to see a little bit of our affection for one another. Let them see you hug and occasionally kiss or hold hands or tease one another and laugh at one another. I think one of the reasons that so many people have such a poor image of marriage today is because husbands and wives show very little to no affection for one another. I mean, when you see a couple in a restaurant and they reach across the table and they're holding hands and they might be rubbing the other's arm and laughing and talking, what do you conclude? They're not married yet, right? That's what you're thinking. I understand, right? But then you see a couple out for dinner and, they're sitting there and they're just kind of staring off into space or really not talking to one another, maybe got their heads down in their phones or something like that. What do you conclude? They're out on their 30th wedding anniversary or something, right? We just have it wrong. No wonder so many young people think that marriage is boring and marriage is outdated because they're not getting, frankly, a very good example from us. Children wish their parents got along, so demonstrate that you do. Provide that security to your children by doing those things in front of them. Now, I'm not saying that children never see you argue. It may be healthy on occasion for you guys to have a disagreement. Your kids need to know that you don't always agree on everything, but you can disagree without shouting at one another, without being nasty to each other. You make up, you show that you're deeply committed to one another. My parents, they rarely had conflict. One time I asked my dad, I said, "Dad, do you and Mom ever fight?" And Dad said, "No, son, we just have intense moments of fellowship." I think I like that. That's pretty good. I've kind of borrowed that in our home as well. It's how you look at things, I guess, you know. But love endures all things. Now, there might be some of you who are here today who this is not possible because you find yourself divorced from your children's or your child's parent. But you can still be respectful to your ex and not use the children as a wedge or as a bargaining chip. Now, you can make every effort to be forgiving, be cooperative with your children's other parent for the sake of the kids. You can intentionally allow your kids to be around loving homes and maybe some relatives or some church members. It boils down, I think, to this, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 7 and 8. Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. Another thing that children want is children want additional freedom. Have any of you ever heard this before with your kids growing up, or maybe some of you, maybe are hearing it now? I wish my parents wouldn't be so overprotective. Has anybody ever heard that in their lives? Okay, some of you are nodding your heads. I wish my parents would trust me more. I wish they would give me more freedom. I wish they would let me go places that I want to go. Stop treating me like I'm 13 years old. I wish they would just let me grow up and be an adult. Some of you are smiling because you've been down this road with a couple of your kids, maybe. I've read that a mother bear drives her cub up a tree when they're about a year and a half old. And then she nips at them if they try to come down the tree to get them back up in the tree. And then she disappears. And when they finally dare to come down, they're on their own from that point on. Now, in human relationships, it's just the opposite, right? I mean, at least that's the way that we're wired. From the time that we are born, we're seeking that independence, and parents are trying to hold on. Toddlers will do the opposite of what they're told to do. Preschoolers will say, "No, mommy, I can do this." Grade school kids, they start keeping secrets from their parents. Teenagers don't want their parents hanging around or being seen with them or hovering over them. And so These children instinctively crave independence, and parents instinctively resist. Don't we? Isn't that one of the hardest things for us to kind of let go? I probably shouldn't tell this, but Stacy's not here. when we took Nick off to college for his freshman year in Cincinnati, we drove two different vehicles. Stacy rode with Nick in one and had some stuff in it. I drove the other vehicle, had some stuff in it. And so the second the front tires hit the road on the campus at Cincinnati Christian University, Stacy burst into tears. I mean, she lost it. We hadn't unpacked the first box yet, and she was a total train wreck. But there's this instinct in us to hold on. It's not our nature to want to let. Now, don't you tell Stacy I told that, okay? One young mother wrote in Reader's Digest, said, I took my month-old son to my parents' house for a visit one time, and during the first night back in my childhood bedroom, I heard my father get up and start down the hall. Then I listened to my mother say to him, "It's cold. Make sure the baby is covered." And pretending to be asleep so I could observe the new grandfather in action, I soon learned that I would always be Daddy's little girl. When he came in the room, he didn't go near the baby's crib, but he made sure that I was tucked in before he shuffled back down the hall. Parents instinctively want to protect their children forever. And there's this natural tug of war that's going on of protection versus independence. And kids are going to push that to see how much freedom they can obtain. And parents need to give their children freedom progressively. I think part of the problem is in our society today is parents give too much freedom too soon to our kids. Ephesians 6:4 says, "Fathers, don't exasperate your children." And that word exasperate means we're not to evoke anger in our children. We're not to cause this rebellious spirit in them. Colossians 3:21 uses similar language. "Fathers, don't embitter your children." Now, there are two extremes at work here. One is that they can, parents can embitter their children by being overly strict, or they can embitter their children by being overly lenient. You know, if you are too restrictive and you don't allow them increased liberty or progressive liberty, you know what happens a lot of times? When that kid's out of the house, what do? When they get their first taste of freedom, man, they're like a new calf coming out of the gate, and they don't have a clue what they're doing. They're just all over the place, you know? They don't have any idea how to handle that freedom, and so they bolt right through some of the boundaries that you've established for them all of their lives. Now, what I see much more is the opposite of that. I don't see too many overly strict parents. And Kendall, I don't know, you might see differently in the school, but I don't think that you do. It's usually the other way around. We don't see the overly strict. We see just the opposite, where some of these kids don't have any boundaries at all. You know, they're often unloved. They're often neglected. And they just don't have those parameters set for them. Just the other day, I saw a 10-year-old boy, and I don't want to sound all judgmental at all, so hopefully it doesn't come off this way, but I saw a 10-year-old boy, both of his ears pierced, at 10 years old. And now, I don't know if just one day mom or dad thought this was a good idea to have this done, but my opinion is he probably wanted it done. He's seen it somewhere. He thought it was cool. And so he convinced mom and dad at 10 years old to let him get both ears pierced. Now, I'm not saying piercings are a sign of automatic failure, but at 10 years old, if that young man is making the decisions like that at that age, that much freedom at 10, I'm afraid they're in for a long, long road ahead. And I think if you were to interview some parents that do some of these things, I think they'd say things like, well, you know, times have changed. We can't control them. You can't be too strict, or they're going to run away. We have this fear of rejection, I think, from our kids. You know, if I try to restrict them, if I try to discipline them, they're going to get angry. They're going to withdraw. They're going to make life miserable for me. But if you give them too much freedom too fast, these kids are going to get bored, and they're going to start pushing the envelope, and they're going to want to do more and more and more. And I think that's why kids at such a young age start experimenting with sex and drugs and alcohol and things like that. I think wise, godly parents give progressive freedom commensurate with their responsibility. You know, I think that's what we need to do. The government tries to do that. You know, you start getting driving privileges when you're 16 years old, and you can vote when you're 18 years old, and you can drink when you're 21. And freedom is supposedly limited to a sense of by a sense of responsibility. I think the same should be true in our case. Wise parents give reasonable, progressive freedom to their children. And once they see that their children can handle that, then, you know, okay, give them a little bit more. When you're 8 years old, sure, you know, you can go to day camp. When you're 10 years old, I might let you stay all night with a friend from church or something like that. When you're 13 or 14, we'll consider letting you have a cell phone. When you're 35, you can date. You know, things like that. Right, Darren? Absolutely. When you're a senior, you might have a little bit later curfew, but you can't stay in a hotel room overnight on prom night. Well, don't you trust me? No. You know, that's just crazy. And then when your kids get married and they settle down in their home and you're no longer paying their bills, you know, then you release them completely. And you become friends. It's a different relationship then, and you can be as close as they want you to be, I guess. But you release all rights at that point of telling them what to do. If they come to you for counseling, that's different. But you just be that supportive parent. Someone might ask, what if your grown children are involved in a behavior that you totally disagree with? That's tough. I don't know if anybody's ever been there before. I'm guessing there's been a few. You're a Christian and they're doing something that you totally disagree with. What do you do? Well, if it's something outside of the will of God, if it's not just an opinion thing, but it's just out and out sin, I think you do what the Bible says you do to other believers who have strayed from the faith. Galatians 6:1, you seek to restore that person. You know, if they don't listen to them, you can express your disapproval, but they're still your child. There comes a point in time, I think you got to quit lecturing. You never stop loving, but you got to quit lecturing. Love them, pray for them, communicate for them without endorsing or facilitating their behavior. For instance, let's say you've got a 30-year-old son living with his girlfriend. The two of them come to town to visit. Do you let him stay in the same room at your house? I won't, if that's ever our situation. You got a 25-year-old daughter, smokes marijuana. You let her do that when she comes to your house? No. You know, it's still your house. You set the guidelines for your home. But once your grown children are out of the house, after you have sought to model a godly example for them, you're released of that responsibility. You know? And as grown adults, your children have a responsibility to honor your values as well. It works both ways. Now, here's a third wish that I think children might have, and it's, I wish my parents would give frequent affirmation. I've heard struggling kids say things like, I wish my parents would just be proud of me. I wish my father would be a dad. I wish my father would just call me every once in a while. I wish my dad would just give me more hugs, you know. Accept the way I raise my children. Accept and love my husband. One of the crying needs that children have is approval from their parents. Now, even when they're little, they start out saying, just, you know, riding a little tykes ride around the living room. Look at me, mommy. Look at me, daddy. They want to see that. And they want to see that you in the stands applauding at their ball games and at their recitals. I think the desire for approval does not stop from the time you're 3 to 25 to 50. I know a preacher who's in his early 40s. He's an outstanding preacher, I think. He preaches at a church that has grown into the thousands, and they have multiple services. They're all contemporary services. And his dad is a well-known preacher as well at a very traditional church. And the two have been somewhat estranged for several years now. And the son invited his father to come to his church for a special program involving the grandkids. And the father reluctantly agreed to come to the program. And the family went out to eat afterward. And the father never said one word about the son's church. Finally, the 9-year-old grandson said, "Grandpa, what'd you think about church today?" The father paused and said, "Well, it's interesting, but I'm having a hard time getting over the fact that your dad didn't wear a tie in the pulpit." That afternoon, the son went home, lay down on the couch, and cried himself to sleep because he still wanted his dad's approval. Well, I think that dad might need to put his personal preference aside, because that's all it is. It's a preference. There's nothing in the Bible that says thou shalt wear a tie when you preach, thankfully. But that desire for parental approval never goes away. And I think wise parents give affirmation to their kids. Doesn't matter what age they are. "I'm so proud of you. Proud of your report card. Son, I saw the way you stood there and you looked that adult in the eye the whole time that he was talking to you, and you shook his hand with a good firm handshake. I'm proud of you. Good job. You know? You stood there and you waited to talk to me without interrupting while I was talking to someone else. Good job. You wear your pants up around your waist. I'm proud of you. Are you feeling okay?" You know? And we affirm our children, you know, in so many different ways. And one way we can do that is by touch. The Bible, you know, there's all kinds of examples in the Bible. Patriarchs are laying their hands on their children, blessing them. We need to do that. Affirm our children by giving them touch and by giving them time. Nothing affirms our children more than spending time with them. Someone said that love is spelled T-I-M-E. Give them affirmation. Give it appropriately. And don't just, you know, heap verbal praises and constant hugs and smother them with attention and hope that your kids are going to turn out to be saints, because there has to be a balance too. I know people who are really, really good at hugging and loving and affirming their children, but we need to understand there's some discipline that sometimes needs to come along with that as well. And there's a couple of qualifiers I want you to consider real quick as we wrap this up. First, affirmation needs to be balanced by appropriate correction. When the Bible speaks of encouragement, it almost always is coupled with rebuking or correcting. Preach the word, correct, rebuke, and encourage with great patience and careful instruction, says 2 Timothy 4:2, Titus 2:15. Encourage and rebuke with all authority. See, those things have to go hand in hand. If you're always just, you know, just saying, "Oh, you're the most wonderful person in the world, and you're great, and all you do is encourage them when they're right," then that's going to wear off after a while. It's going to seem insincere. It's going to seem phony. If you don't care enough about them to rebuke them as well, you know, it's not going to be the same. It's not going to mean the same. And your parents or your kids learn to respect you and respect your authority. How many of you have ever been pulled over by a police? Well, you don't have to raise your hand. You've ever been pulled over by a police officer, right? And he walks up to the window and he wants to see your license and registration. How many of you kind of start to clam up a little bit? You get a little bit nervous when that happens. Some of you out there, no, I've been pulled over so many times, doesn't bother me anymore. You know, I don't. But maybe you clam up a little bit. Why is that? I mean, he doesn't come up. He doesn't threaten. He's calm. You know, there's a calmness in his voice. Respectful. But he has authority. He has leverage. He can write you a ticket costing you big money. He can handcuff you. If you get out of hand, he can arrest you. He can use a taser or a gun if he needs to. And we should respect them for that. Parents have been given authority by God over their children. And you have leverage. And they should respect that. You can spank. Yeah, you can do that. You can give them a timeout. You can ground them. You can take away their allowance. You can, goodness, you can threaten not to pay for college or something. You know, you do what you want, really. You don't have to shout or plead, but they need to know where the action line is. They need to know that, hey, it stops right here. When I was a kid, I knew where that line was. You know, I could ignore my mother. I was really good. I could, Ronnie, you know, and then it'd get a little deep, Ronnie. But when she would shout, Ronald Myron, that's right, Myron. That's it. At that point, yeah, a lot of you didn't know that. 12 and a half years, you're just finding that out, yeah. At that point, I knew I better move, you know, or I was going to be in trouble. Now, the second qualifier is that affirmation has to be balanced by teaching children that their ultimate approval comes from God. Okay? The Bible says that Hezekiah feared the Lord, sought his favor, Jeremiah 26:19. Parents, it's your responsibility to teach your children that the only approval that matters in life, even though we seek the approval of our peers, we seek the approval of our parents, the only approval that matters in life is approval by God. I want to, let's say for a moment that there's a tightrope walker. And he's got a tightrope from the top of Lucas Oil Stadium, and it's running over to the adjacent building. And there's thousands of people gathered on the streets below, and they're getting ready to watch this tightrope walker. But his manager comes up to him and says, hey, you know what, I'm not real sure if this is tied real tight on this end, and really I don't even know if it's tied that tight on the other end, but you go ahead and go, it's okay. Yeah. How would that tightrope walker feel about walking across a tightrope? Not very good. They'd be very insecure. And people today are telling their children, parents are telling their children, you know, we don't know where you're going when you die. We don't really know where you came from either. You're probably here by accident, but you're great. You can do anything you want. No wonder our kids are so insecure. No wonder they suffer from so much low self-esteem. No wonder so many kids struggle with thoughts of suicide. They have no sense of identity, no hope in their eternal destiny, and they have no sense of self-worth. And for years, parents have been telling their kids, you know what, there's no moral absolutes. You shouldn't be surprised when they act like there's no moral absolutes. Deuteronomy 6:9, these commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them upon your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. That's our responsibility, parents. Now, next week, we're going to deal with, I wish my children would do this. And so what we're going to do next week is we're going to dismiss children's church so that the children can be in here with us to worship. And mom and dad, this is a great opportunity. Grandparents, if you bring your grandchildren with you, this is a great opportunity to teach them correct behavior in a worship service. Take them to the restroom about 3 minutes before the service starts. Tell them not to ask to go to the restroom during the service. If they have to leave, tell them they're being immature and they'll have to go to bed earlier that night. You know, it'll amaze you how spiritual they become when you put those parameters out there. You know, teach them about God and worship, because you're affirming their eternal worth when you do that. I was in grade school. I got a lot of affirmation by playing sports. My mom and dad would come and watch me play, aunts, uncles, all that kind of stuff. Friends and relatives would say, "Wow, he's pretty good. He might make an all-star team. He might play, you know, in high school." I like that. I gained confidence about that, playing ball. But my parents, my dad especially, behind the scenes, even though he loved sports a lot, he knew that God had something else in store for me. So when I grew to be 5'11", and the Cubs and the Pacers were not all that interested in me, I knew I had something better in store. Proverbs 22:6, train a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he'll not turn from it. And there might be some of you parents out there today as our musicians come, and your children love you and they pray for you, and they might even be longing for you to make Jesus Christ the Lord of your life if you've not done that yet. And I would encourage you to make that decision. If the love of Christ on the cross and the prayers of your children, if that doesn't melt your pride and motivate you to repentance, what will? Why not today? Why not make Memorial Day weekend a day you'll never forget? By surrendering your life to Christ, whether you're a parent or a child, or whether you're widowed or young or old, respond to the love that the Heavenly Father has for you by coming and repenting of your sins, confessing Jesus as the Christ. If you've never been baptized into Him, would you consider that today? I'm going to ask you to stand with me at the end of our prayer. The invitation is open. Let's bow.